I'm from Burma.
I came from Iraq.
I'm from Somalia.
I'm from Somalia too.
I go to America.
We have carried with us
videotapes,
my dad's picture,
some very old Sunday school books.
Without your past, you're nothing.
This is where I came from.
Why would someone leave their homeland? One reason, they're forced to by war, disaster, religious and political persecution. I'm Barrett Golding. This hour, Hearing Voices from NPR presents Refugees. Producers Anne Hepperman and Kara Ola spent a year talking to refugees living in America. They asked them why they came and what one thing reminded them of home. For the Ali family, it was a picture of their father, which they brought from Afghanistan to Amarillo.
Hi, my name is Lena. I'm from Afghanistan.
And I came with my family, like my mom.
I'm Shafiqa Shirali. I have 9 children.
And my sisters and my brother.
Hi, my name is Maria Shirali. I'm the oldest of my family, sister and brothers.
We all come together as a refugee.
We're not worried about money in Afghanistan. Because in Afghanistan, my dad was a doctor.
We have a very big house in Kabul.
I don't remember how many rooms on it.
The only reason that we are moved from our country because of the Taliban.
We are sitting outside and we heard those bombing and shooting stuff.
My dad was like, just let's leave.
And we worried because my dad, he was a doctor for the military. We heard the Taliban's kill a lot of people who work with the government.
My husband say, keep your children, you go. Because I go with you. Taliban kill you and the children and me.
We live at the early morning, but we don't get anything with us. Only the dress that we wore.
We were on the mountains for 13 days.
13 days.
And 12 nights we were like traveling.
Sometimes coming walking. Sometimes come with the truck.
20, 30 trucks follow each other. It's all full of children and women. They all take him to different place.
We are come to the Pakistan, my husband not with us.
I make a dress for people and we make a little money.
We start the life from the zero. We begin again. There was a picture of my dad in my brother's wallet.
It was a black and white picture when he was young. It makes me so sad and I start crying because I missed him a lot and I said, I wish he was with us.
Somebody told for my mom there is an embassy. If you go there, they're going to help us with the food or something. And they decide to, they send us to the United States like a refugee.
I can't believe you believe me. I just think like this, oh God, you help me. Because that's too hard to go to different country.
When my mom came and told us that we were going to America, we were not happy to come in here.
Some people told us that the man is hug you, kiss you, if you want, if you don't want it. We are really afraid of this stuff.
When we came in here,
the only things that were important for us are dad's picture.
We make those pictures bigger, so we still have it.
Assalamu alaikum. How are you doing?
When we came to the United States after a few months, they told us that we should work and support our families. And then I find a job for the restaurant, like a Waffle House. I was waitress there. I working hard, but the money is not enough for me. But I think why I shouldn't open a little store for myself. Because I know a lot of refugee people here. They all need the stuff that we use to our country, but we couldn't find.
This shelf for African food. This part for Bosnian people. That one's for Iranian people, you see?
And after that, the Russian people come here, Croatian, and everybody come and ask about their stuff.
We get a lot of refugee people here.
My relative back home, they ask me, is it hard to a woman run like a grocery food? I told them, no, not at all. I feel more like Americans when I do this business.
Hello.
Morning, front desk.
Now in Amarillo, I'm working at the hotel. I'm the front desk manager in here.
Yes, sir. Can I help you?
The other day, I was checking somebody, and he was asking me where my accent from, and I said, I'm from Afghanistan. He goes, oh, you're not one of those Taliban, aren't you? And I go, well, thanks, sir, but that's really rude. Some people, they do say those stuff, but who cares? We wasn't sure if my dad was alive or not. My little sister, she was so young when we brought her. The only way to remind her of my dad to show his picture. She knows him as a seeing his picture. We all sisters have one copy of that in our purse. And always when I look at that picture, it reminds me like he's looking at me.
One day, somebody called me. I said, hello? Hello, how are you? Oh my gosh, are you alive? Say, yes, I'm alive. Are you alive? I say, yeah, yes, I'm alive. We are together crying. We are talking to the telephone in 30 minutes. So after that one, we are applying for he's coming here.
When my dad came from Afghanistan,
we wait for him until he get out from the airplane.
And when he walked in, we would just scream and yell and cry and hug him.
Oh, I thought I'm dreaming. I touch him. I say, I can dream that or it's for real, my dad is here.
You know, it's right. Your husband is with you.
Even though I have my dad with me, still I love this picture because it keeps me remind of him. It's always keeping me to remind of him. We're all happy to have him back. I keep taking pictures with him and I feel like we're a complete family now.
The instrument is called a tana. It's a small wooden harp with this haunting bluesy tone.
Lele, lele.
The song is one of those ancient love story tragedies from the times when the Karen people came down the Salween River from Tibet into the lush forests of Burma, back when they were the only people in these mountains. 77-year-old Sentene guides me up a steep path to a makeshift monastery to meet his music students. For the old folklorist, these traditional Karen songs are a way these kids will remember their culture. In addition to the harps, there are handmade mandolins, complicated dance numbers, and a tiny mouth harp through which young lovers whisper sweet nothings to each other. The songs are so soothing. I almost forget that outside these bamboo walls, we're in a refugee camp of more than 40,000 Burmese ethnic minorities and political exiles. These musicians haven't seen their homeland in 20 years. The younger ones were born here, citizens of no country. I hop in a truck heading down the Thailand-Burma border to another refugee camp, hoping to meet more musicians. When I enter the camp, I see a billboard with pictures of Hamburgers, Santa Claus, and Joshua Tree National Park. It's sort of a pre-Welcome to America. The United States accepted nearly 14,000 Burmese refugees in 2007, mostly from the Karen ethnic group. More are on their way.
There's not many paddy fields.
I tell them I'm American and can answer their questions. The refugees look at pictures of shopping malls and ask me questions like,
do we need to be afraid of the bomb? Can we work freely? Or?
Yeah, you can work freely. Don't worry about the bomb, worry about the paycheck.
Many in these camps don't want to resettle to Western countries. But after 60 years of civil war in Burma, most can't go home.
Good evening. I'd like to welcome you to the Karen concert tonight.
A few months later, I meet a group of about 40 Karen refugees who've been resettled to Lancaster, Pennsylvania. A church group is holding a gathering to introduce them to the local community.
Like the United States of America, our country got independence from the British Empire.
A friend of mine runs a small radio station that broadcasts in the refugee camps on the Thai-Burma border. We asked recent arrivals to tell the folks back home about life in America.
These people told us that they have a good situation, better than in refugee camp. They can walk freely and they can earn good money, like pocket money.
Some of these people were lucky. After 2 decades in a refugee camp, they found work farming, which was what many Karen did back in Burma. But other refugees, who've never seen snow, end up north of Calgary in their flip-flops.
The weather is very different in Thailand and Burma. Cold season is very hard for them because they didn't have a warm clothes, so it's kind of culture shock. I think it's very hard for them to find that place.
I think they want to show us some Karen instruments.
Often it's the educated, the leaders of the communities who are approved to resettle in Western countries. For those left behind, in refugee camps, and a dwindling patch of forest in eastern Burma, the fabric of their community is fraying, and the military regime which exiled them continues to gather power.
Music and interviews recorded by Jack Chance of the Mountain Music Project in a refugee camp on the Thai-Burma border. This is Hearing Voices, another in the One Thing series coming up by Ann Hepperman and Kara Oler. It's the Augustine family, they're Catholics, who moved from Iraq to Detroit.
Just 1 second. Oh, yeah. My dad has videotaped us for all my entire life.
I remember this.
Every time we watch it, it's a very, very, very nice feeling to remember your childhood.
It's because of this dance. You can look at it, please. Very nice.
Yeah, you can remember how it was at first. Because without your past, you're nothing. This is my birthday. Back home, we had best life back there.
In Iraq, it was a really good life.
But now, Iraq, it's like hell. You don't know where, what time you're going to die. Every second, you're in danger. First, when the American army got in Iraq, we thought everything going to be real good. We were happy, but nothing happened. My dad, he became the head of the Christians. He was the relationship between the Christians in Iraq and the government.
In my office, very danger. The street danger, the church danger. In my house, danger. Everything in Iraq is danger, really.
So after we got couple messages, either you pay us this amount of money or your house get bombed, we had to leave Iraq. We left just about 2 days, everything.
You leave Iraq and it is very danger.
The road was thieves, whatever, all around. Actually, we couldn't bring everything because it's hard to get out of Baghdad, and best thing you can bring with you is your memories. So you brought with us videotapes.
You should see this.
This is the last day in my summer school. Isn't it good to bring your memories with you? Yeah. Life in Jordan, if you have money, you live like a king. If you don't, there is no future in Jordan. You can't work, you can't do anything. We stayed 6-7 months in Jordan, and the day I find out that we're gonna get here to the United States, I was playing basketball with my friend in Jordan. I was wow. But I couldn't say it out loud. I didn't tell him till like last week before I leave. My aunt lives in Detroit. All my mom's relatives, they live in Detroit.
I want to see my sister here.
My mom, she did all the work for us. Yeah, all papers.
This visa is very difficult to get.
We're lucky we got here like in 1 year. No more than that. I know a couple families, they've been waiting there for like 5, 6 years, even 11 years, and they're still there.
This is our church in Iraq. It's a very big church in Iraq.
My mom is Chaldean, and the rest of us are Latin Catholic. We are Christians from Iraq. Oh, here's the when the cardinal, when he visits Iraq, here's me and my sister waiting for him. I'm holding the Iraqi flag, and my sister holding the Vatican flag. When we got here, wow. It's just Chaldeans everywhere you go.
Okay.
And my friends, right here. Here is Simon. We have Chaldean Arabic malls and Chaldean Arabic radio stations. Newspapers, yellow pages. There is even Chaldean man running for mayor in our town. Chaldeans everywhere you go in Detroit, Michigan. We're like, are we in Iraq or something? My job? Oh, I work in Papa Joe's, it's grocery store here. I work in produce. Something we have to do at night, that's push carts inside. I didn't have to work in Iraq. We were like high-class family, we live in a very good neighborhood. I used to like just take money from my dad and spend everywhere. Now it's different. Me, my sister, we get to work, they have to. My dad sits there, his remote in his hand, news, all the time news, but now I don't really watch news anymore, just hurting me, news hurting me. Like before there was one Saddam, now we have like 100 Saddams. Why the United States and Iraq? Do they want what happened now, or they can't control it? I don't know. If the people ask me if you want to go back home and live there, no, not really. I like it here, because here you can get whatever you want. By your studying, your working hard, you'll get it for sure. Yeah. My dad's still videotaping us even today, in every occasion, like birthdays, graduation. This is in Detroit. It's my graduation. It's on June 9th, 2007. All right. Just 1 second. Now let's go to the party. Now we're cutting cake. So we keep videotaping everything. Even regular days sometimes. If we have nothing to do, we go videotape everything. Everything.
Refugee is a people that someone come over and take over your homeland and you have no place to go. You have to escape for your life.
We've been shot at.
Oh, it was very, very scary.
Why are you here? And I told them, well, if we didn't, the communists probably kill us already.
You know, you have to go somewhere that is safe and for you to be able to survive and save for your life and your family.
In her dream, this old lady told her that section of the country that people live the most, the rest mostly die.
You have nothing anymore. No place to live.
I knew very few words of English that I learned at the camp.
That's all you have to do is refugees that way. You have no home.
They just told us, just go out of town. And as we pass each town, that town has to go too.
I remember that time, the boat, it was so, so small boat, but we have more than 100 people in there.
And sometimes they call your name, that means they're going to kill you. They have all kinds of bandits, and also the Khmer Rouge, they still hide in that forest. And sometimes they would come and rob people, and sometimes even kill or rape young girls.
The fact that I was able to get through the Khmer Rouge and I was able to overcome the language barrier and the culture barriers and get to where I am today, I look back, I look in the mirror, it's like, how did I get here?
In that year, you have to be very quiet and walk very fast, and if you could run, run.
See this picture? All my family, all of them work here.
I must say that when you first came over, let alone the language barriers or the cultural barriers, do you know your way around?
Because a lot of people, they know, they just get in there, and we cannot say no, because if we reject them, then they went, we never know what happened, you know, so we have to take them.
When you first came, you know, December was very, very cold. It was raining and cold.
With limited English, I understood that language. The language of love and the language of hate.
I'm afraid that in the future, maybe the children doesn't know where they come from and what the ancestors are and a background they're coming from.
Doesn't matter how you speak it, doesn't matter how you listen to it, you can actually understand that.
Today, I am worried about the younger generation. They have too many things to learn. And about American culture, and I'm afraid that the culture is threading away, you know, like it's going away.
The men in Poland, there are still a lot of needs, because people who came in early 80s, many of them did not have a chance to go to school.
I think it's important to know that it's what is your values are, and what your ancestors and what you're from. And not to forget about that, it's important for them to carry that on, so they can tell the children, you know, great children, and the children after children. And
if you don't start, you can't finish. So they have to start somewhere. Just like a baby who just born, who cannot grow up right away, you have to start somewhere. I hope our dream will come true one day.
When you say one word, how do you survive? Several civil wars and killing field and minefield and refugee camp and here, I'm here. Across everything, I cannot live. How can I survive? But I'm here.
Refugee dreams. People from Vietnam, Laos, and Cambodia now living in Portland, Oregon. That's from the Crossing East series by Dime Roberts. We have the stories of more refugees coming up in a minute on Hearing Voices.
From NPR, this is HearingVoices.com.
I'm from Burma.
I came from Iraq.
I'm from Somalia.
I'm from Somalia too.
I go to America.
We have carried with us
videotapes,
my dad's picture,
some very old Sunday school books.
Without your past, you're nothing.
This is where I came from.
You are hearing the voices of refugees. Here's another One Thing story by Ann Hepperman and Kara Oler. It's the journey of Malakal Gwak, which started in Sudan and ended in Omaha.
My father used to be a very nice singer. Like he composed songs and he sing them. When I happened to be singing one of his songs, I always remember him, remember home. You know, he was just talking about romance, about how he got my mom and him and his friends, how they dress and their style of walking. And of course, the life he is talking about in his songs is a life I never witnessed. I left Sudan twice. The first time, I just left Sudan to go for studies. And when I finished my undergraduate, then I went back to Sudan. Sudan has been having a civil war for many years. If you want to be active and help your people, then you are subject to persecution. I went and worked with the International Relief Organization. I was arrested in Khartoum, in northern Sudan, and they put me in a jail with war prisoners in a town in southern Sudan called Juba. The security personnel would come each day and kill one person. And then you will be asked to clean the blood and the piece of the body that actually fall down. You know, sometimes it's just a decision that one has to make when you see there's no other options. And actually I escaped jail. That part of town is very bushy. It has a lot of forest. I just told them I want to go to a toilet. We were two of us. A senior officer pointed a soldier and said, take them just a little bit to the bush here. This soldier stood less than 3 meters. And before anything happened, nobody tell one another, let's run or something. We just ran. But he was yelling at us, stop, stop. They released a lot of bullets and everybody was like running after us. So all of a sudden it was very unfortunate because there's some landmines. I just heard a noise and I'd assume that was my friend because I didn't see him again. So I had to keep walking. I know I'm going toward either Kenya or Uganda. That's all I was assuming. It took me about 4 days. That's how I end up in Kenya. When I reached Kenya, I got involved in working with human rights activities. For that, we go to southern Sudan and we deliver food to the displaced persons in southern Sudan. My coming to U.S., it was for conference, and I was one of the speakers to come and update them about the situation back home. I came to Omaha on June 25th, 2003. I decided to apply for political asylum as soon as I came here. My wife and my children are in Nairobi, Kenya. When I decide to apply for political asylum, they can't come here until my process are complete. I actually sing my father's song to my wife when I was in Kenya. This song is a very famous song, especially during the weddings. When girls used to sing it, they clap their hands. And then it goes like that, and the other woman goes to the other person like that in a circle. I brought my father's songs from Sudan with me. Sudanese, they like being together. Omaha has the largest population of the Sudanese in the United States. People meet at the Sudanese Center.
My name is Kawunda.
Kawunda is the person in charge of the center.
You can see the sign here, Sudanese Center of Omaha, that where we meet always.
I come here and play some cards.
Let us open the door, let us see. You will get a lot of people that coming in here, more than, you know, 50, 60, 70 Sudanese that always come to this place, Sudanese Center.
When we are there, we actually address a lot of issues.
They are talking about children. Most of the children here, they are really getting out of control. Every Friday or every Saturday, Sunday, you hear a lot of shooting. It's really scaring people. Some of them even drop out from the schools.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
After I arrived in the United States, I worked with the refugees and I personally formed the Council of Elders.
What kind of training are you going to give to the elders? Because what they receive from you is what they will be helping the community with.
That brings all the tribes of the Sudanese here to discuss issues of domestic violence.
Learning and understanding the laws here and how to live under those laws.
It is a responsibility of elders to go back into our community and educate our youth with culture and a better way of living here, especially the younger ones. There are many youth that when you find them, they ask you a lot of questions. Because though they are Sudanese, most of them were born in the refugee camps in different countries. I actually believe the song teach a lot because it showed to the people that are young here the tradition way of Sudan. You know, sometimes someone else would just sing it and say, hey, this song is your father's song, and I would start singing it again, you know. It makes me proud of him, and at the same time, you know, it just helps us to remember him.
Burma is like midnight, dark. In 1988, the uprising started in Rangoon, capital city of Burma.
Thousands of heavily armed troops are patrolling Rangoon and other major cities in Burma tonight.
I was a high school teacher, yes. Everywhere, uprising demonstrations.
These scenes show students and Buddhist monks shouting anti-government slogans.
The army took power.
Moments later, they were fired upon at point-blank range by these soldiers backed up by armored personnel carriers.
The army rules as they like. No human rights at all. Some people went underground, fled the country and taking arms, you know. Some people established Chin National Front. It is fighting for democracy and fighting against the military government. Some people, we keep staying in cities and doing our jobs, like high school teachers, but having connection with those friends, underground people. One day, I met one of my friends who went underground. He was a very handsome boy before. Now he is very thin and very weak. Why? Because he is in the jungle doing something against the military government. He went underground. He took out of his bag a book published by the Chin National Front. Oh, that book was so impressive to me, and they requested me to write a poem. The same night, I composed a poem. I'm a poet as well. The title of that poem is Victory with Identity. Victory with Identity. So would you like me to read out for you or what? It is like this. One of my friends I met one morning. Firmly his hands shaked mine, his face smiling. Surprise and joy, no words I could start. Oh, my friends, wake up. Let us fight this common foe. Let us fight against this military rule, the common foe for everybody. When I wrote this poem, my pen name was Midnight. It is safe for me instead of using my real name. But the military personnel have a clue that I must be the author. Some of my friends told me, Sui, be careful. You'll be questioned very soon. So it is not safe for me to stay there. This is why I need to urgently leave the country. When I told my kids I have to leave, they came to me and they embraced me and don't go. I told them, okay, I'll come back very soon because I had a great hope that Burma would get changed. But unfortunately, things got worse and worse and worse. I fled the country in 1999 and a Bible college in Cincinnati accepted me. So I was so fortunate to come to America. We, the Chin people, are known as Christian people. In Burma, you know, we can't practice Christianity as we like. But in America, we worship with full freedom. In 2000, a lot of Chin people came to Indianapolis. So I came to Indianapolis every Sunday. And when we worship together with them, oh, I feel home so much. Every Sunday we worship, choir singing, prayer, sermon. And the Sunday school kids show their talents very lovely. Every Sunday we pray for Burma. My wife and my kids came over to Indianapolis June 3rd, 2005. Whenever we have time, we parents teach our kids about what is happening in Burma. So sometimes I need to tell my kids about my background. So this poem, once a month, I read it to them. Are you changed by somebody else other than yourself? Oh, brothers, let us fight against this foe. I think it is still valid to what is happening in Burma now. I live in this free land in America, but I still miss my country. So I would like to go back home and do something good for our country. So I pray for that. The last stanza of my poem is like this. Change is the process of this world and of nature, you know. So Burma never get changed. But I still hope that it will change.
A poem by Burmese refugee Sui Tueng Ne from the One Thing series by Ann Hepperman and Kara Ola. This is Hearing Voices. Here's a story from the Democratic Republic of Congo. Bovic Antosi's wife and children were killed in tribal violence, so he got out and made it as far as JFK Airport. This is from the Crossing the Boulevard project by Judah Sloan and Warren Lair with a song by Kingsley Ogunde.
Àwọn kan tún dúró, wọ́n dúró lọ́nà kan.
I'm sitting on a wooden crate on a cargo flight to somewhere. The plane lands where I honestly do not know.
Ogun ayé dúró, ogun ìdílé dúró. Ogun oṣó dúró tá a mọ níṣe ni kò gbẹ́yìn. Ibi kọ́lọ́fín ni wọ́n wà, wọ́n dọdẹ.
There was a box that I was sitting on top of it without knowing what was inside. My friend is a Russian pilot named Melanov. I paid the money. It was not free.
Jenny Tori Itani. Oro hiru mi loju olubala mi o.
When we landed, I was waiting for him in the cargo until the time he came and picked me up and we went to get the other plane to Istanbul.
Asheni Tori ileri ogo tolarun se fun mi ni.
Melanov hands me a passport and visa with my picture and a made-up name. From this point on, you are Piri Christopher, and you are from Zambia. Then he hands me an envelope with a ticket inside. Go to the destination of the flight and you'll be a free man. I give my boarding pass to the steward and see that I am going to JFK International Airport.
Alavaro. Alavaro. Tani Yoshe. Alavaro for me. Alavaro.
When the plane landed, one of the custom officer came and when he searched my bag, he did find now my document from Zaire. My citizen card, my birth certificate, the birth certificate of my daughter, and my marriage certificate. You have to tell us you are from where because you do have two identification documents. And I said, I'm looking for a United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees because I'm in trouble. I'm looking for a place where I can claim my freedom. And they told me that I could seek asylum in the airport. And I sought asylum in JFK Airport.
Ishoro kilo le okano ti Jesu ko le se fun o se tai lo lo tabi tai se se ni.
From 3 p.m. to the following morning, 8 o'clock the following morning, handcuffed, hands and feet, crying the whole night. I slept there in JFK Airport. I don't know what's going on to me. I don't really know. And then finally, I was in an orange uniform and they told me it's a detention center and it's not a jail. I was surprised to be in a building without windows and no access to outside life. And there's nothing else to do except reading, praying, and I was writing a book about my life. That's what I did all these 2 years in detention.
Christening, mighty was me, oh. Bobby, angali no tiso. Oh, jojumo ni satani dode. Torire, toson, toruo. Ombura mura mulati weni ti opaje. Sumo bi, alabaro konbe fun.
When I came out, facing the light, the sun, I fell down because I'm used to the dark. I'm used to the industrial light. Coming now to see the sunshine, I was like dizzy and I fell down. And now, even if I don't have anything, I'm enjoying the life because I know that I'm free. There's nothing better than freedom, but I'm still discovering it.
When I heard all those Burundians were going to come, I shared the news with everybody I knew who were Burundian. In Phoenix, we were not that many. We felt so happy because we are growing. Given that we have seen so much death, we are in need of rebuilding ourselves. So every Burundi who comes is welcome. We're talking to two women who, since the war started, have been taking all that long journey together. So they decided to form a family on their own.
My parents left Burundi in 1972. From there they went to Rwanda. I was born in Rwanda. But there was a conflict there, so I went to Congo.
Crossing Congo took us years.
From Congo, I went to Zambia. We have a small song.
They create that song in Zambia in the refugee camps and they brought it with them. Sing is in our culture. That's how they tell their stories.
I was separated from my husband in Congo, and we never saw each other again. I was carrying my baby on the back all the way.
I spent days and days walking to find a place where I could be safe.
There was a time when I ended up in the middle of the forest, and the bushmen kidnapped me. I was forced to be with them.
We were running without knowing where we were going, and we ended up in Angola. In Angola, all the fighting armies would capture the women and rape them. I witnessed a mother who was attempting to release her daughter from the soldiers. The mother was saying,
"Can you please release my daughter and use me instead?"
They took the mom and the dad and killed them. I will never forget that.
The song is about them in that journey. It's very sad day and night to run away, escape, eating the grains, the seeds from the soil, from the ground. It's very sad. Sleeping in the mud like a pig. It's very sad.
I finally made it to Zambia, to the refugee camps.
In Zambia, they found themselves
together,
sharing the same compound. In the camp where they were, there were too much insecurity. They were threatened to be killed.
That song, we started singing it in the camp. Then we said,
"It's time that we sing this song every day."
And even now we are singing it.
When they came here to Phoenix, they found that they had placed them together in the same apartment. Till now, they are together and they treat each other as siblings. The new Burundian refugees coming, they still believe that it's like a miracle.
I came here in America from Zambia.
I came to Phoenix May 29th of this year.
I came to Phoenix June 5th this year.
I came to Phoenix July 9th of this year.
23rd February.
When I learned that I was coming to Phoenix, of course, I felt very happy.
Now they can start dreaming.
Finally, this is the day for me to go and sleep.
Peacefully.
And I would rejoice because before, it was like darkness in my mind.
They are saying it's time. It's time for us to take a deep breath. It's time for every Burundian to eat the fruit from their effort.
When I'm at home, when I have free time, all I do is to gather my children in the room and they listen to songs.
And the one question that she always have and that it comes all the time in her mind is, why?
Why am I a victim of all of this?
Why am I a victim?
What have I done to be who I am? Everywhere I am, I will ask myself that question.
From Burundi to Phoenix, that's our last One Thing story by Ann Hepperman and Kara Oler. They're at ankara.org, ankara.org. This music is by Khmer Rouge refugee Duran Pravan, who's now running for Prime Minister of Cambodia. From Peak Recording in Bozeman, Montana, I'm Barrett Golding. There's links to everything you heard at hearingvoices.com.
Hearing Voices is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people, and the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes a great nation deserves great art. Our producers are Scott Carrier, Ann Hepperman, Larry Massett, and Kara Oler. Our intern is Max Darum. Mix engineer is Robin Wise of soundimagery.com. Executive producer is Barrett Golding. From NPR, National Public Radio, this is hearingvoices.com.